unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfectory is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself.
To the Buddha, to the Dharma, to the Sangha. There are some plants whose flowers bloom in the night rather than in the day. And those flowers are usually, maybe always, very pale, so that they will reflect the maximum of light, or what little light there is at night. In spiritual terms, I think of joy as the night blooming flower of the spirit. The deepest grief that beings know comes from a very strong conviction of separation. Separation from that which we love. And in the deepest and darkest forms of grief, based in the illusion of separation from love itself, from the source of love, the eternal, we see the logical culmination of all the lesser illusions. Yet, of course, at one level, separation is not just an illusion. When we lose someone we love, any being that we love, when we lose a part of ourselves in some sense or other, the grief that we experience, the sadness, shows that there is love there as well as separation. Were there no love, there would be no sadness. So all beings come to know grief. All beings come to know sadness. Because all beings love. And because at the level of the appearances of things, separation happens constantly. And separation can seem sometimes so final and so real. That night-blooming flower of the spirit is a reminder that the deepest reality is not that of separation. Joy is a reminder that there is a fundamental reality that is a reality of unity, oneness within the eternal. There is that unity, and there is difference, seeming separateness. Oneness and difference. Just as we can get caught in the level of appearances, we can also get caught in clinging to the unity in our efforts to put off or avoid the grief of the sadness of separation. That doesn't result in joy. It results in stagnating grief. We have to be willing to experience, to accept, to embrace, to look up within the experience of painful separation. Certainly not to cling to it, which can be done when people become sentimental. Maybe sentimental is not quite the right word. When people get involved in nostalgia and in effect keep opening old wounds. Because there is, when the wound is open, there's also some experience of the love that is and was there. Nonetheless, nostalgia and sentimental reminiscence don't solve the underlying problem of the grief. Taking the whole bundle of our thoughts and our feelings to the eternal, in other words, taking direct refuge in love at its very source, allows grief to wash through and allows joy to manifest naturally when all conditions ripen, and to do its job of reminding us that even in the midst of the greatest darkness, in the midst of the greatest difficulty, in the midst of the greatest suffering and pain, love with a capital L is, and we are of it, and all of that stuff, that dark stuff, is of it. It may need some conversion, it may need some help, it may need some processing, and still, it all has the Buddha nature. None of it is apart from the love of the eternal. None of it is to be despised or scorned or viewed as just being rubbish to be thrown out. It's all good grist for the mill of training and enlightenment. It is the raw material of enlightenment. Were there not the grief, there would not be the joy. Were there not the delusion, there would not be the enlightenment. Were there not the ignorance, there would not be the wisdom. The world is not subject to our personal will. We cannot just wish away the dark side of life. The deepest joy is the joy that accompanies direct recognition of the eternal as and in the whole of existence. This is what solves the fundamental problem posed by grief. This is different from saying it eradicates the possibility of the future experience of grief. We never cease to be human. But is it what dissolves the knots of dark, anguished grief that get caught and held in the matrix of our body and mind. Most people enjoy a good adventure story. I sometimes think when I'm watching a good adventure movie or reading a good adventure story, whether true or fictional, and I have to say that there are astonishing true life adventure stories that are more amazing than anything anyone can imagine, any fictional work. But I often think when I'm watching a movie or reading a story like that or listening to someone tell a story like that, it sure is a lot more comfortable watching it or listening to it, reading about it, than it is actually going through it. And it's nice to be able to vicariously enjoy adventures in that way, because it's a lot harder to actually enjoy the adventure of life with all of its twistings and turnings and with so much of the experience of separation, coming together and then of going apart. Yet this real life adventure is something magnificent and exquisite and wonderful and a real life adventure that is ordinary human life provides the ideal circumstance for beings like us, and here I am talking to human beings, for beings like us to train so as to make it possible for the love and wisdom of the Eternal to get at all the spiritual need that we carry within us. This very ordinary human life that we live truly is the life of Buddha. And when we come to know this, our joy is inexpressible.
Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.